Any health-related information on the following show provides general information only. Content presented on any show by any host or guest should not be substituted for a doctor's advice. Always consult your physician before beginning any new diet, exercise, or treatment program.
Welcome to Five to Thrive Live, a podcast about thriving for those who have been affected by cancer and chronic disease. I'm Dr. Lee Salschuler, and I co-host Five to Thrive Live with my good friend Carolyn Gazella. And you can find all of our past show podcasts on any major podcast outlet and also on our website, iThrivePlan.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, which announces our upcoming shows. So on today's show, we're going to hear from Dr. Monisha Banot. Dr. Banot combines her expertise in cytopathology, functional culinary medicine, and integrative medicine to take us on a journey to optimal health. Dr. Banot provides health programs at drbanot.com and leads wellness workshops and retreats worldwide. And she is the author of The Anatomy of Well-Being, which is the topic of our show tonight. But first, let me thank our sponsors who make 5 to Thrive Live possible. For more than 35 years, Gaia Herbs has been on a mission to connect people, plants, and planet to create healing. With extensive experience manufacturing high-quality botanical products, Gaia Herbs has products for healthcare consumers and a dedicated product line named Gaia Pro, tailored to healthcare practitioners. Practitioners can learn more at GaiaHerbsPro.com and consumers can visit GaiaHerbs.com. Also, Immuse, a unique patented postbiotic that gives your immune system a key advantage. Immuse is an ingredient in many immune-supporting dietary supplements, and look for it on the label or go to ImmuseHealth.com. Cognizant Citicoline, nature's way of keeping the brain's energy-producing centers firing on all cylinders. So if you want to enhance your brain function, memory, focus, and attention, look for Cognizant on the label of your favorite brain health product or go to Cognizant.com for more information. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, a best-selling probiotic for over 30 years with 12 probiotic strains, which are shelf-stable without refrigeration due to a unique 3-year fermentation process. And you can learn more at DrOHaraProbiotics.com. And finally, ProThrivers Sleep, a melatonin-based sleep formula specifically created for thrivers. ProThrivers Sleep is available through your healthcare provider or online at pureformulas.com. And with that, it's my pleasure to welcome Monisha to 5 to Thrive Live. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on 5 to Thrive Live.
Absolutely.
Forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. So let's get right into it. So I just have to start, you know, we like to introduce our guests a little bit personally. So how did you go from pathology, which is all about disease diagnosis, to culinary and integrative medicine?
So it actually goes back even before pathology, because I was an internist before I did pathology. And that was over two decades ago, almost close to 3 decades ago, where I was seeing, you know, the same kind of patient coming into the emergency room, in the clinic, my same H&Ps, my same medical chart notes, and nobody was getting better. And I just thought to myself, well, this can't be right. I'm doctoring, I'm giving the medication, things are supposed to get better. And I think there was both a sense of dissatisfaction, both from patients and from myself, that what can we actually do? So at that time, I was not familiar with integrative medicine. I don't know how popular it was back then, but I decided, all right, what can I do where I feel like I am helping a patient move forward? And for me, that was really being able to provide as accurate a diagnosis as possible. So I went into pathology, which is a very comprehensive approach to the human body from a cellular level, looking at both cells, looking at blood, looking at tissue, looking at organs, and really seeing the entire disease process as it evolves from something benign into dysplastic, into malignant, and really watching that morphology change over time. And as I spent so many years doing that and diagnosing so many cancers, over that time, and the thought that, okay, well, cancer is just a disease of aging and cancer is part of your genetics, you just get it. And well, I know better than that, because we actually check people for their genetics. So it, and genetics are very different than mutations we develop over our lifetime, which is, you know, its own spectrum. And to me, there had to be more answers. And that's where I really decided to look at the body in this spectrum of, all right, we have this anatomical perspective, but then what else is going on? How is this being influenced by our lives and what we're doing with our lives? And that's kind of what led me to integrative and culinary medicine.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad you were led there, because I think you clearly have a lot to offer, both through your book and through your clinical practice. And so let's talk a little bit about your book, which is called, again, The Anatomy of Well-Being. You set the stage for well-being by talking about it as a journey and, in fact, as a story that's unique to each person. And why is that an important context? Why did you begin this book that way?
Well, I began the book with that everybody is unique and their journey to well-being is unique, because when I think of individuals, everyone has a different anatomy, everyone has a different DNA makeup, and everyone has different individual habits and lifestyles and experiences that they go through to really make them who they are at that point in their life. And it's a journey, because that will change throughout our stages of life as well. And I wanted people to kind of take it from that their individual journey is their journey, and not to really get into the trap of comparing themselves to other people. And, you know, I see this at all phases, like, you know, maybe when somebody gets a diagnosis and like, for example, a breast cancer diagnosis, and they're talking in their communities, and this person gets this kind of treatment and that person gets that kind of treatment, and one does well and one doesn't. And first of all, there's over 30 types of breast cancer, but what I want you to understand is everybody's experience with this is going to be a little bit different. And if you can understand that, then I feel like you can kind of optimize where you can really touch your own well-being to the best of your ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I think the, you know, it's important, especially in the context of such a terrifying illness where the treatments are rather overwhelming. And I think people can feel just like a number sometimes. So remembering that everybody's journey is in fact very unique and important in their own way is a really critical way to frame things. So going through some of the things that you highlight in your Anatomy of Well-Being, you have a chapter on rituals and habits. And in that chapter, you state that life is composed of whatever you do most of the time, not some of the time. And that's an important statement. And I'm wondering why or what you mean by that, rather than just me interpreting it. What's why is that so critical?
Well, so when we're thinking about our daily lives, I feel we can fall into those familiar daily rhythms. They're built around maybe key fixtures like going to school or going to work. And we often begin our days and end our days almost the same way. And although this familiarity around that is very comforting, those rhythms don't necessarily help us. And they sometimes can become thoughtless rather than intentional. And for me, I sometimes see that people are just going through the motions in autopilot, and they're steadily moving closer to dis-ease. And what I'm talking about is really going from this place of habits through a spectrum of routines to more like creating rituals that have the greatest amount of intention and self-awareness behind it, and also the greatest amount of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So speaking of intention, you talk also about a transformational mindset. So explain that a little bit more.
So mindset to me is is very, it's fluid. It can change. Our thoughts and experience can change our mindset. So I don't want individuals to think of their mindset as a static thing. This is the way I was born. This is my one experience, and this is how I'm going to live it out. It can change over time, just like our bodies do. And getting set stuck in a certain type of mindset, like maybe a pessimistic or negative mindset, can really impair your physical, emotional, relational health. But I want you to be open to the fact that you are capable of changing this mindset and shifting it and redesigning your life, especially because the way you think is going to govern your behavior. It's going to inform your attitude. And this attitude is ultimately the emotional result of your mindset. So it's like this cycle, right? So just knowing that you have this ability to change it. And I even think of it sometimes from a little bit more ancient perspective. I know having a growth mindset has become a bit trendy, and how can we do that? But this is actually quite an ancient concept from Hinduism called samskara, where we can have a mental imprint acquired from our thoughts and intentions and experiences. And they play a whole, like a huge role in our personality and how we see the world. And these samskaras basically embed into our behavior. And we can create new samskaras by creating new experiences. And that doesn't mean you have to go somewhere. Like, you can visualize. Visualization is really powerful in creating new experiences. And taking this approach of this mindset from a place of self-awareness can really be important to creating those new neural networks. So you're not stuck where you think you're stuck. And then you can create that new self-narrative.
Right. Neuroplasticity. Love it. You know, this is such a, I think, revolutionary concept for those of us who are interested in transformational health, because it's really the science that tells us that our brain is literally rewiring itself based on our experiences all the time. And the more experiences or thought patterns that we have in a certain direction, the more that gets hardwired in to how we think and how we respond to the world around us. So we literally can change the way we are in the world and the way we perceive our world, which I think is so profound and really is hopeful for people who feel kind of stuck. But absolutely, it's interesting that in Hinduism, they'd figured that out thousands of years ago. We're just a little late to the party, I guess. So let's transition a little bit to more concrete kind of things. You talk, obviously, you have an background in culinary nutrition and in the value of the health value of food. And you talk about nutrition in your book. So I'm wondering if you could just highlight a few of the things that you feel are really unique or critical for people to think about in terms of the way they eat and what they eat.
Yeah. So, you know, there is a spectrum of opinions of which diet is right and which one is wrong. But at the end of the day, I think everyone can agree that there is something very powerful about phytonutrients. And so I think that is a missing link in a lot of people's diets. So I'm talking about plants, eating plants. And that takes me back to one of your earlier questions of when we're thinking about, you know, life is composed of whatever you do most of the time, not some of the time. And I have patients who will tell me, well, I ate a salad last week. As if that is going to be enough to combat the other 6 days of eating processed food. So I think phytonutrients are underrated and really should be a key feature. And this is something we need to be teaching our children. This is something, you know, parents should be very familiar with. As the way I see them, they are the sources of containing plenty of antioxidants to combat those free radicals that we can't seem to get rid of, that we are exposed to over our lifetime. So really having those nutrients from the plants, you know, down to the things with all the little fancy names, but also the vitamins, the minerals, is very important. So I don't think that's quite unique, but I think it's something that is absolutely critical and is missing in the common language of what individuals are doing on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear. Okay, so next favorite topic of mine is movement. You know, we've had several guests on this show talk about physical activity and the importance of exercise. You emphasize movement as an art. So I want you to describe what you mean by that.
Yeah, so movement as an art is, to me, I'm thinking of it as really this beautiful flow of energy, and our body was meant to move. Okay, that's the beauty of it. The body wants you to move. In fact, when people sit around all day, they notice that their back gets more stiffer or they get more achy. And you know, what's actually happening is the joints need blood flow in order for them to get nutrition, because cartilage doesn't have a blood supply. It gets it from the body moving. So when I'm thinking of art, movement as art, I'm thinking of it as this beautiful flow of energy, whether that's blood flowing through your blood vessels, lymph flowing through your lymphatics, but really this thing that you can't see in this body that just has its own energy. And you can do movement in any way. And that's where I really want you to think of your body in this, that you don't need to be the person who wakes up at 6 a.m. to go to the gym to do something that is absolutely miserable to you, right? You can just do what you enjoy. If dancing is what you enjoy and doing it in your kitchen, you know, and really start thinking of it like that, because it's just movement and that's what makes it beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think we put everything into these categories of we have to go to the gym 5 times a week and we have to do this. But if we can create this flexible lifestyle where we have a little bit of joy with that energy and that flow, I think that just makes for a happier life.
Yeah, it's a really nice way to frame movement. I think, especially for people who are intimidated by exercise or still trying to build a regular exercise habit, thinking of it as flow through their life and, you know, being almost the painter on the canvas and figuring out how that energy is going to flow through movement is a really nice imagery.
Absolutely. Life is your palette.
And life is your palette. That's right. In more ways than one. And if you just joined us, I'm Lise Auchuler. I'm speaking with Monisha Banot about the anatomy of well-being. Okay, so we've talked a little bit. We've just touched on nutrition. We've touched on movement. And, of course, sleep is important, which you have a chapter on that. But I want to talk about a unique chapter in your book, which is something I haven't seen written about a lot. But you talk about the importance of space being a sanctuary. And you even go so far as to identify what you call some key space villains. So I'm wondering if you can just walk us through some of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's both space villains and space heroes. And I think this part of the book really came from two aspects of my life. One is the amount of time I have spent working in a hospital and seeing my colleagues' desks covered with clutter, and the amount of time it would take them to accomplish the same amount of work because they were looking for something under a pile of papers compared to a very clean, not so cluttered space. So that's one area it came from. And then another area it came from was really thinking about when you're walking into people's spaces, how do you feel? Like, do you feel light and airy, energized? Like you want to spend time in this person's home or their place. I mean, we usually feel this when we go to a nice hotel room and it's all nice and clean and the bed is made, right? But we don't think about this in our own spaces. And so one of the main space villains is clutter. And the reason why I feel clutter is not so good for your well-being is, well, the amount of cortisol that you may experience just because your space is disorganized, finding your keys or your glasses or whatever you need will create experiences of unnecessary stress and frustration. And that negative experience can impact your mind and body, leaving you anxious and depressed. So just a little bit of cleaning up might help. I know some people are like, well, I just like to live my life that way. And certainly there are individuals who can thrive from that. But I think a majority of us can do a lot better when we declutter our space. Then other areas for space villains would be things like fluorescent lighting, some of the worst lighting in hospital offices. And probably a lot of corporate offices is fluorescent lighting and how that can strain your eyes and your ability to do stuff, in addition to dust and fumes that you might be experiencing. I know in the laboratory, we definitely have our fumes, including xylene and formaldehyde, which can impact us on a long-term basis. And then, so those are just some of those space villains. And I want you to think about getting them kind of under control, because that can save you time. It can save you money. It can make you calmer. It can make you less stressed. And it might even help you become more fit, because usually people who live in cleaner environments are more likely to want to also take care of their well-being and exercise. It can decrease your procrastination and even increase productivity. So if you're looking to improve at your workplace, that might be a place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and as you were talking about this too, it came to my mind that you're really speaking, you're continuing to speak about flow in a different way, right? So you're kind of talking about flowing through your life, removing the clutter, the physical clutter, but of course that's a metaphor as well. And just giving yourself a chance, really, to kind of fill the space in the way that is most aligned with your health and well-being. So I think it's really an important topic and one that doesn't get spoken about enough. So I'm glad you have that emphasized in your book. And, you know, you also focus on emotional exploration as a key to well-being. So how, in your work with patients, let's say, how do you encourage people to explore their emotional terrain? And really, as you're doing that, how do you navigate, I think, what can be tricky, right? So people can kind of come into landmines of emotional trauma. They can affix certain outcomes to events that occurred and left kind of emotional scarring, rightly or wrongly. So, I mean, there's a lot of trickiness to this. So how do you help people explore this?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Lise. So emotional exploration as a key to well-being is, I think a significant part of it is building awareness around your emotions and that self-awareness. And what I want you to be able to do is feel and anticipate those feelings and how they might affect your behavior. When we think of emotions, and I ask my patients to describe how they feel about something, the words are very limited, because it's actually even hard for them to use more words than just angered, annoyed, agitated. You can have over 100 different words for your emotions, and most people are sticking with the same maybe handful. So what I encourage them to do is really explore this in with a different range of emotions to feel both sides, both positive and negative, and feel them deeply, because there is that balance, right? So in order to feel true joy, you may have had to feel, you know, unhappiness. So I think that's just one aspect of it. And so really giving them a spectrum of a list of emotions and identifying them, and then creating a balanced experience from that. You know, so if you have external events and there's something that you are concerned about that's creating some kind of emotional tension for you, how can you reframe that experience in a different way? So that's essentially how we start. I mean, it's not a one and done thing. Nothing in your journey to well-being is, and that's why it's a journey.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, you started in a really good place, which is just self-awareness, really, and becoming more in tune with how we feel about things is a very important and big first step, and something we all have to come back to all the time. That's good stuff. So what do you think? Is there a role for dietary supplements and botanicals in creating well-being?
100%. So, you know, maybe your audience knows this, but before pharmaceuticals became widespread in the 20th century, most healing was done using medicinal plants. I mean, we have all the, you know, back from Ayurveda, which is over 5,000 years old, and then the other indigenous places that are using these plants. And they have not stopped being helpful. So that's one thing. It's just a matter of how can somebody incorporate them and understand how to incorporate them. I think so. There's absolutely a role. But I think there's a role with caution. Just like there's caution around medications, there should be caution around dietary supplements and botanicals. And I think working with, you know, an integrative provider who understands that, understands how they work in the body, is really a good place to start there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Lots to say about that, but of course we don't have time to delve in too much detail. So since writing the book, which is not that old, but since writing the book, what have you discovered more recently and what's kind of exciting to you right now?
So what's really exciting to me right now is this, taking this kind of functional culinary medicine approach to healing. So what I mean by that is, okay, we can get to a little bit more of a root cause of what's going on in the body. And for me, I really do that from a cellular level. I mean, I am the individual who has looked at your cells, and I know what I call them angry cells look like versus happy cells. And then really incorporating it into culinary medicine and food as medicine. And what I'm really excited about is seeing these ingredients incorporated into everyday life so we can combat this modern world we're living in. I mean, I'm using recipes with ashwagandha in my curry, or like moringa leaves in my salad, and just really taking plants that we have access to and putting them into our everyday life.
Yeah, I love that. That is exciting stuff. And, you know, given your emphasis on phytonutrients, that makes a whole lot of sense that that would be exciting to you. So, Manisha, what final thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners?
I think my final thoughts are, we make health more complicated than it has to be. I want you to learn what's right for your body. And that's really what I'm teaching you in the anatomy of well-being. I wouldn't say I'm putting you through med school in 500 pages, but I want you to understand your body. I want you to be able to listen to yourself and listen to what they're saying to you. And at the end of the day, your well-being is non-negotiable. And I really invite you to live with intention and purpose.
Love it. Yep. That sounds good to me. Well, this has been a great show, and I want to thank you for taking time to join us this evening. And where can our listeners find out more about you, your work, and where can they find your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at my website, drbhanote.com. So that's drbhanote.com. I'm also on all social media platforms with that same handle, Dr. Bhanote. So on Instagram, YouTube, wherever I am, I'm there. And additionally, the book is available at online on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other retail bestsellers.
Perfect. And again, yeah, just to spell your name again for people, if they're trying to write that down, it's the website is DR and then BHANOTE.com. Well, thank you so much. This wraps up the episode of 5 to Thrive Live. And again, I want to thank our sponsors, Gaia Herbs, provider of exceptional quality botanical products, Cognizant Citicoline to help enhance memory, focus, and attention, Immuse, a postbiotic for immune support, and Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics award-winning pre- and probiotic formulas, also ProThrivers Wellness Sleep, created specifically for thrivers. And thank you, listener, for joining us. May you experience joy, laughter, and love. It's time to thrive, everyone. Have a great night.